OTC is go.
Agapus is go.
PTC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Tuesday night show, 22nd of June. That means the solstice was yesterday. Good evening, Diane.
Good evening, Craig, and it's summertime.
It is. It's now officially, you know, the unofficial start of summer is always Memorial Day weekend. Now it's official. Right. It's actually summer, and now, starting tonight, it gets dark just a little bit earlier.
Yes. Well, I love it here in Florida when it gets dark real early, because then it kind of feels like winter, even if the weather is in winter. It feels like, well, I like everything from Halloween through New Year's. I like that time of the year.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a great time of year. The only time I've ever been in Florida is in the winter, literally around New Year's, and that was a long time ago. It was back in the early 80s when I was there for that. But yeah, it's summer solstice was yesterday. That means it gets dark just a little bit earlier now. Every night gets a little bit earlier, and so we're on the downhill side of the year.
Yep, pretty soon it'll be time for the Christmas trees.
Well,
oh, please. Before that, all the witches and goblins and ghosts of Halloween. You know me, I decorate for every holiday, from Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, you name it.
See, that is why Groundhog's Day is my favorite holiday of the year. You don't have to do a damn thing. There are no cards to buy. There's no decorations to put up. You don't have to do a thing.
I thought you like Festivus.
Well, Festivus for the rest of us, but even that requires some effort. I mean, you have to put up a Festivus pole. You know what I mean? So I by far, Groundhog's Day, absolute best holiday of the year. There's no special meal you have to cook. There's nothing. It's just,
well, you got
just
to
hold
in front of your TV to see if the little rodent sees his shadow or not.
No. See, we don't even do that here. You know, I mean, this is Wood Lake, and we have Wood Lake Wally. We don't care about Punxsutawney Phil. We don't care what it's going to be like in Pennsylvania. You know, we've got Wood Lake Wally. Now, Wood Lake Wally is a raccoon who lives under the dumpster across the road from the machine shed on the west end of town.
Oh, my
and
God.
If Woodlake Wally crawls out from under the dumpster and sees his shadow, then we've got 6 more weeks of winter. Of course, though, you can't always trust Woodlake Wally because he drinks.
Ah, he's a drunk raccoon.
Yeah. So you can't always trust him, but yet it's, you know, that's what happens here. And we go by that. So,
okay.
You know, and so it's no special trip. All I do that morning is I plan to take the garbage down to the dumpster that morning, and I'll be there right at sunrise, and if he crawls out and sees his shadow, I know what's going on.
Ah, Okay, here we don't even bother because it's paradise just about all year long.
Folks, we got a great show for you tonight. Couple of interesting segments coming up. Diane, you're covering a very serious topic on anti-Semitism in America.
Yeah.
It's a growing problem, and it's way out of control.
It's way out of control, thanks to certain members in Congress.
And the mainstream media, let's not leave them out of the mix.
No, of course.
I am covering also a very serious topic tonight. Birds, barbecues, and other racist nonsense.
Very serious from that title, guys. You notice nonsense?
Oh, yeah, it's snarky.
Yes. It's funny, yeah. Though, folks. It really is.
It's funny. And I'll tell you this much right now. You got to go look at it yourself. You got to see the illustrations that are in it.
Yeah, some of them are quite funny.
They're and a video. There's a video in there you got to see, too. So that's all I'll tell you for now. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. But let's start with quick hitters tonight. And one, Chelsea Wolfe. Now, a lot of people probably never heard of Chelsea Wolfe, and why would they, and why would they care? Well, I don't. But Chelsea Wolfe is a transgender BMX bicyclist who is an alternate for the Tokyo Olympics. Okay.
In other words, she was a he, and guess what? She's still a he.
Right. Now, we don't know if that was on purpose or if she had a bike crash, but you know, whatever the case might be that caused her to change, we don't know. But here's the thing. She put up a Facebook post recently that said her goal would be to burn the American flag from the Olympic podium if she won a medal.
In my opinion, the fact that she put that up, and we can still get her post, even though she took it down. Some people have already, you know, tucked it away. Anyone who says that in a public venue, they should pack their bags and get the hell out of here. We don't need you. We don't want you.
You know, there's about 195 different countries in the world. Pick one and go there.
Yeah, and stay there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that tough, but she put that out there, and she said, you know, he says, you know, it's not that I don't like my country. Well, yes, it is. And you know who else thinks so is Mike Ruzioni. Now, a lot of people, if they're over a certain age, are going to remember that name. Mike Ruzioni was a captain on the hockey team that beat the Russians in 1980.
That was the miracle on ice, folks.
Michael Ruzioni called her out. And I mean, he did not hold back. He said at first he thought it was a prank, a joke. And then he realized this Chelsea guy was absolutely serious. And he was like, how do you do it? He said, you know, when you're in the Olympics, you represent every aspect of your country, every part of your country.
Right.
And when a guy like Michael Ruzioni tells you this, you damn well ought to listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this person who claims to identify as a transgender woman doesn't mean he has gone through any surgeries or anything, just identifies as, you know, this stuff is getting so out of hand. To even give these people a modicum of credence is too much. I don't even like discussing asses like this who will use their sexuality, whatever it may be at the moment, to actually bash the United States, bash everything we stand for, and then claim they're a moral person like this one is doing.
Right. You know, it's BS and everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I was in charge, if I was the president of the U.S. Olympic Committee, I would see to it that that piece of crap never gets to Tokyo. And if I couldn't stop that, if that piece of crap won a medal and pulled a stunt like that, I'd have that medal immediately removed.
Anyone who makes a statement like that should be removed from competition before the competition takes place.
It's hard
because
to argue.
You don't know what kind of enablers within the organization would see to it that he, she got the medal. You know, the Olympics is no longer the Olympics, folks. It's another political discourse to get these anti-American messages out there.
And you know how things are today, that it would not surprise me, not even in the least, that the U.S. Olympic Committee is completely, quote-unquote, woke, right?
Oh, please, I hate that term.
Look,
I hate that term. I don't want to even hear it. You know what it is? They say they're woke to everything that's going on.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You got your heads in the sand, and you're buying into the Democrat nonsense. You're the sheeple.
That's it.
A reinvented version of the sheeple. You will do, believe, and say, and think what you're told to do, believe, say, and think. You don't have an original thought in your heads.
Well, but I'll tell you just how woke the U.S. Olympic Committee is. They're allowing transgender athletes to compete. Therefore, we now have, for the USA, a guy competing as a girl in weightlifting.
This has gone too far. This is why I will not watch this Olympics at all. This is crap.
It is. I used to love watching the Olympics. I used to get a real kick out of it. It was always fun. You know, you rooted for the good guys. You rooted for the Americans. You know, and most of the time, you never heard of most of these athletes. I mean, every once in a while you would, because somebody had been in a previous Olympics.
Right.
Right? So you kind of recognize their name. I mean, there's you know, Flo-Jo, Florence Griffith Joyner. You know, from Winter Olympics, you know, you would recognize, you know, Brian Boitano and Scotty
Hamilton,
yeah, Scotty Hamilton, you know, Mark Spitz, yeah, you know, because those were huge names, Bruce Jenner, you know, because, you know, we're talking about people that won a ton of gold over the years.
Caitlin, huh?
No, I mean Bruce.
Yeah, I know. I'm kidding. You know, the bottom line is these people that are pretending to be something they're not. When, like I've said it a million times before, you can change the outside package. You can cut it off. You could add to it. You can fool around with the insides a little bit, but you cannot change your genetics. You cannot change your DNA. If you're born a male, you die a male. If you're born a female, you die a female. It's that simple.
Well, what's really simple is you don't let a guy compete against women in sports, especially something like weightlifting.
Exactly.
I mean, it's hardly a fair competition when you're doing that kind of thing. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on this. I'm hoping this Chelsea Wolf character, I mean, he's an alternate, so he's not... You know, he's only going if somebody else gets hurt or gets caught, you know, doping or...
Oh, I'm sure they'll arrange it because, you know, they need to make a message, send a message out to everybody. They'll find a way to get he, she in there one way or another. But you know what? You can follow it. I don't waste my time with these idiots.
I don't intend to watch. I might watch the opening ceremony just to see how they light the torch. That's always kind of interesting to me. But outside of that, I don't really give a squat this year.
Lately, the only Olympics that I've watched is ice skating because I love ice skating. I can ice skate and I love it. That's the only thing I watch. I don't watch anything else.
Yeah. Well, you won't see any of that in Tokyo.
No, not in Tokyo.
Be the Summer Olympics we're talking about. They're coming up fast. But anyway, Kristen Sinema Senator out of Arizona, Democrat Senator out of Arizona, has done something and said something rather remarkable for a Democrat right now. She has come out defending the filibuster in the Senate.
Yes. And she's very smart for a Democrat. She actually says, you know, once you're in a majority, it's tempting to believe you will stay in the majority, but that's not always so. And she actually feels that the filibuster is needed for our democracy, which is good, because between her and if Manchin holds true, we never know what happens with him because at the last minute he tends to cave. But if he doesn't cave on this, the Democrats ain't going to get anything done.
Well, I mean, the filibuster is there for a reason, and the Democrats used it a year ago before they were in the majority. And they used it successfully on several occasions, which was frustrating, you know, when you're trying to get something done. But it's there for a reason, you know. And yes. Cinema's right. I hate to say a Democrat is right, but in this case, she is right. Most of the time, she's about as liberal as they come. But in this case, she hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's a few Democrats out there, some still in politics, some not, like Tulsi Gabbard, who really are blue dogs. I wouldn't even call them really far-left liberal, progressive. I'd say they're trying to hang on to the party of JFK.
Well, I don't know that I would classify Kristen Sinema as a blue dog. I think she is pretty damn liberal, but like you said, she's maybe smarter than the average bear on the left side of the aisle, and she, I think, is reading the tea leaves. There's a pretty good chance that they could lose their majority in the Senate next year. Now, if that happens, and they've already done away with the filibuster, they're screwed, and she knows it.
Well, you know, we always have the voting tabulation machines to worry about and all that, but about an hour before we went on air, I just decided to make sure about something in the Constitution. And in the Constitution, it actually says when federal elections will be held. Gives the specific day, it's the second Tuesday, November, whatever. And that's the only day that federal elections are supposed to be held. Well, I put up a little Facebook blog saying, as per the Constitution, federal elections are only to be held on one day a year. And that, in my opinion, means early voting, absentee ballots, are actually unconstitutional.
I agree.
Okay, yeah. It's gone wild in less than an hour. And yet, not one constitutional lawyer has ever addressed this as far as the voting. We need Ted Cruz to address it. He's a constitutional lawyer. How about the Supreme Court address this?
Well, the Supreme Court can't really address something that isn't brought before them.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But one of the senators, Ted Cruz or the others of his kind, you know, true conservatives, hey, wait a minute, guys. The Constitution says this. No early voting. No vote by mail. None of this stuff. It has to go.
I agree 100%.
And I think some of these Democrats, you know, we tend in conversation to lump all Democrats the same. But there are the remnants of the blue dogs, the JFK Democrats, who don't like what's going on, but they're so outnumbered that they've kept quiet.
Well, they're just like the rhinos. They're a bunch of nutless wonders.
Yeah.
You know, they can't bring themselves to stand up and be heard, you know, even though they should be, but they won't do it.
They won't do it. But, you know, we're going to keep an eye on this filibuster thing because, boy, that's going to be coming up before you know it and onto the floor of the Senate. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll let you know what happens. Moving on to Portland, Oregon. Portland, Oregon seems to be having a wee bit of a problem. They're begging people to come back and visit Portland. Begging.
Well, I actually call it buyer's remorse because here it is. They bought into the whole BLM crap, the whole riots, the whole defunding the police. And now they're they're in big trouble and they want people to come back to the city. No one in their right mind would go to Portland now, the way the police situation is, the way, you know, BLM and Antifa have basically taken over sections of the city. As far as I'm concerned, it's a loss. It's hopeless. I could care less about Portland.
Look, not only BLM and Antifa, but they got a hell of a homeless problem there now, and they run the roost in certain parts, especially city parks in Portland. You mentioned the police situation. They've had like 150 cops have quit, walked off.
Right.
You know, and last week, the entire rapid response team, that would be their equivalent of a SWAT team, their entire rapid response division quit last week because of the defunding thing. They're put in such a position they can't do their jobs.
Right.
You know, so here you got people not going to Portland for all the obvious reasons. You got cops leaving, which means the crime rate in Portland is skyrocketing.
Mm-hmm.
Portland's no longer a safe place to be, and everybody knows it. You got the homeless issue, the drug use issue in Portland, which is way out of control. And you've got a liberal mayor, this guy Wheeler, and you got a bunch of liberal city officials. So they're begging people to come back, and they're begging them by putting an ad in the New York Times, and they've got a video out. And in their ad and in their video, they are actually bragging about the fact that they are a fully woke city. And, I mean, they're bragging about the things that are keeping people from going to Portland while they're begging people to come to Portland. It's crazy.
Well, that goes along with the whole woke culture. The whole thing about it is crazy. So why not, you know, have crazies buying into it?
Well, it just goes to show you that these flaming liberals, these deep blue liberals, have no sense of self-awareness whatsoever. None.
None.
And speaking of flaming liberals, Jeff Bezos has announced that when his company goes to space, he will be on the first ship that goes to space.
Maybe that ship could keep heading out. Just keep going and going and going. Don't bring him back.
Well,
he borders on being a traitor. If he wasn't such a big capitalist, but it's more like he's a selfist. Everything is for himself. He's just gone over to the other side, basically.
Well, he has, but that's kind of the point of this final quick hitter this evening, is the fact that so far, more than 60,000 people have signed on to petitions trying to prevent Bezos from returning to the planet Earth once he goes into space.
Well, you know what? There's a 50-50 chance something can go wrong with his rocket and he might not return to Earth, or he will return to Earth in many little pieces. Not that I wish that on him, but there's always that possibility when you go up that you might not come back down in one whole piece.
You know, he won't be the only one on the rocket, so
His brother's going with him.
Well, I don't know anything about his brother, but,
His brother's going with him.
I mean, the thing is, I don't put much stock in any petition. I don't really care for him, okay? And that's because most of the people or entities that petitions are aimed at don't give a damn what anybody else thinks. You know, so you sign a petition, it doesn't mean anything. You get a warm, fuzzy feeling for a couple of minutes. You say, well, I signed the petition. But I'll tell you something. In this case, I might just sign on to this one because it's so weird, you know?
I won't waste my time.
Well, I mean, it's good. You know, I'll look it up. It probably won't take me more than 5 minutes to add my name to it. You know, probably take
That's
me less time.
You'll never get back.
You know, but in this case, it's just kind of funny. You know, I mean, there's actually two different petitions out there right now trying to prevent Bezos from re-entering Earth's atmosphere. Now, you know it's not going to happen, right? You know, you know that will never happen, but it's so bizarre that I almost want to do it. Now, I did take some time today to go look at the rocket that Bezos, it's Blue Origin, right? That's the name of the company. And I went and I looked at their rocket. And it's an odd-looking thing. I mean, it really is. It kind of looks like a rocket-powered sex toy.
I was just thinking that.
Doesn't it?
I'm taking a picture of it right now. And by the way, it's his brother Mark that's going to be going with him. It's almost like sending up a symbol. Screw you, folks. Here I come. It's the weirdest looking rocket.
It's just right, folks. I mean, look, if you haven't gone and looked at it, okay, just go onto Google and put in Blue Origin rocket, and it'll come up. You'll see exactly what I mean. But I can't think of a better thing to load that idiot into and shoot him into space, honestly.
There's a couple of people I'd like to pack that rocket with, along with them.
I could make a list.
Yeah, now that would be fun.
I could make a list. Hunter Biden. You know, put him on there. I mean, as long as the thing's not coming back, you know, put him on there. You know, I could make up a list. But I'm almost thinking maybe tomorrow I'm going to go put my name on that thing. I mean, look. My name's on the stuff, you know, so, like, you know, your name, my name, both of us, Diane, you and I, our names are on Mars right now.
That's true. Our names are on Mars, and I'm on some little ships that have gone out into space, my name. But that's because we've been space geeks, if you will, since our childhood.
Yes.
It's not something that we suddenly said, oh, this is so cool, let's sign on to this.
No, this is a lifelong fascination.
Exactly.
You know, which is why I think if there's even an inkling, I mean, a 1 in 10 billion chance that, you know, such a thing would work, you know, that a petition like this would work, I may as well have my name on it.
It's not going to work. It's not enough. Usually the petitions are not taken seriously until they reach 100,000 signatures. One of the petition on Bezos is 20,000. The other is 60,000. So I don't think anyone's even going to take them seriously.
Well, it's not a matter of whether they take them seriously. I mean, come on, Diane. You got to lighten up a little bit here. It's a petition to send a guy into space and not bring him back. I mean, I don't care if they get 100 million signatures. It's not going to happen.
No.
You know?
It doesn't interest me. It really just doesn't interest me.
All right.
Me
so you're no fun at all. All right. So we've gotten to the bottom of the segment here. We got two great segments coming up a little bit later. I'm going to snark things up and see if I can plant a smile on Diane's face with birds, barbecues, and other racist nonsense. But when we come back from the bottom of the hour break here and a couple of station IDs, this is a topic that Diane has chosen for tonight that is way out of control in this country. It's despicable, it's deplorable, and it needs to be talked about openly and honestly, and she's going to do it in just a couple of minutes, on anti-Semitism in America. Stay with us, folks. More Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor. If you miss any part of tonight's show, you can always go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning. Right there on the podcast, you'll find us, tonight's show, Podbean hosting the podcast, and we love them for that. And we continue to get more pod people downloading the podcast. It's great.
Yes, it is. Very surprising numbers we're starting to see.
Now, we love our pod people. Oops, I got something playing here that isn't supposed to. You stop that right there. Okay. I had to stop. We had something playing in the background there. It wasn't supposed to yet.
Okay.
I don't know why it kicked in, but it did. All right. So, this topic, Diane, you have been wanting to do this for quite a while, and the situation has become so obtuse and so overwhelming at this point, you decided to take this on, and I'm glad you did, on anti-Semitism in America.
And let's start with the fact that here in America, we are now sadly bearing witness to a violent rise in hate crimes being perpetrated against American Jews, with said rise beginning even before the latest conflict between Israel and Hamas began. Now reaching a high point of sorts via an allowed increase in anti-Semitic speech online, speech which more times than not includes the word, Hitler was right, our Jewish population knows more trouble lies ahead. And with certain very vocal anti-Israel politicians in Congress adding fuel to the ever-growing anti-Semitic fire, fuel courtesy of their not only comparing Israel to Nazi Germany, but their blaming all the world's Jews for what they consider to be the apartheid policies of Israel, these politicians have allowed for Jew hatred to become not a legitimate cause for concern that must be addressed, but instead a cause to be championed. And the American public is either unaware as to the severity of what's becoming an unsettling trend of growing anti-Semitism here in the U.S., or they're aware but have willingly chosen to turn a blind eye to it instead. And while history itself shows that some degree of anti-Semitism has always existed here in the U.S., Remember, for example, that by the end of the 1930s, 83% of Americans were opposed to U.S. admission of Jewish refugees trying to escape Hitler's slaughter. And also remember the No Jews Allowed discourse of the 1950s. But today's current hardcore reigniting of what was waning anti-Semitism started back in 2019, when then newly elected Representative Ilhan Omar was rightfully named Anti-Semite of the Year. But what exactly did she do to deserve such a dubious, yet seemingly so well-deserved honor, but accuse America's Jews of possessing dual loyalty with allegiance to Israel and of buying both political influence and political favors with their supposedly vast amounts of money? And with this being just the tip of Ilhan Omar's ever-increasing amount of ongoing Jew hatred rhetoric spewed, the six words she'll probably be most remembered for is her now and forever infamous statement regarding Jews and their money, as in, quote, "It's all about the Benjamins, baby." And to throw yet another log on the now ever-growing Jew hatred pyre, this very statement was so proudly endorsed by the equally vile anti-Semitic duo of David Duke, the former head of the KKK, and the Nation of Islam's titular head, Louis Farrakhan. But no matter Ilhan Omar's words said back in 2019, nor even her words of Jew and Israel hatred currently being spewed, and no matter her squad sisters in hate, as in Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whose very words about Jews in Israel being in quite the same vein as Omar's, it's the looking away by both the Democrat hierarchy and by Democrats themselves that has allowed for anti-Semitism to grow and flourish here in our country. How so and why? Simply because the Democrat hierarchy and their media cohorts have turned the future of the once honorable party of JFK over to the socialist ilk of Omar, Tlaib, and Ocasio-Cortez, with Bernie Sanders, Craig, thrown in for what they consider good socialist measure.
You know, it's amazing when you hear this stuff coming from the halls of Congress, you know, from the very party that claims to stand for inclusion. But there is historical precedent for this and political ideological precedent for this, right?
Yes. Yes, in fact, history has shown that where socialism takes hold, so too does anti-Semitism. For anti-Semitism seems to go hand in hand with the Democrats' now seemingly anti-capitalism agenda, an agenda easily seen in the implementation of Biden's socialist-leaning economic policies. And why this dubious connection? Because a pre-economy that is minus religious bigotry simply does not allow for either socialism or religious hatred to take hold, because capitalism itself encompasses racial, ethnic, and religious tolerance as a means by which to help said country's economy grow. And this alone is the antithesis of socialism, where a country's economy remains basically stagnant while power is consolidated into the hands of a few, something we are currently bearing witness to. And if the few in power happen to harbor ill feelings towards a specific group of people, as in anyone different than the sum of their accepted whole, and here insert the word Jew, things like anti-Semitism can, and now sadly do, take hold. And with anti-Semitism being called the world's oldest hatred, one has to wonder, Craig, exactly why such Jew hatred not only still exists, but seems to be increasing, not only on a global scale, but here in the United States as well. So to truly understand, we must first consider the root cause of said hatred, which boils down to a man named Jesus, and who was and who was not to blame for his death.
Well, look, there are certain things about Jesus that a lot of people simply will not admit to or will not recognize, but they are very, very basic things, and they are facts. Why don't you outline some of that so people know what we're talking about here?
Simply, Jesus, who was born, lived as, and died as a Jew, knew nothing of Christians, for he was out to reform the Judaism of his day, not set upon creating a new religion. And the fact is that the Jews of Jerusalem were not responsible for Jesus' death. Pontius Pilate alone was, for the Jews of Jerusalem at the time of Jesus were but slaves, and no slave had the power to influence the Romans as to whom to kill or not kill. Jesus, in reality, was just another victim of the politics of his time, with politics then becoming the basis upon which Jew hatred was created by the early church founders, who had to find a way to separate what was the true Judaism of Jesus from the newly created Catholic faith. But here let's fast forward to more modern times and the fact that the Holy Roman Catholic Church, under Pope Benedict XVI, exonerated the Jewish people for Jesus' death, while most evangelical congregations have not officially done so, thus leaving the old hatreds not only somewhat intact, but still being propagated as truth. And it's this being one key reason, in my opinion, that has allowed anti-Semitism to reemerge as a problem here in our country, for many to the far right are as anti-Semitic as are liberals to the far left, thus allowing for a twisted normalizing of hate, if you will, that seems to equate into a certain acceptance of outward bigotry towards America's Jews. And while some claim that the seemingly unending Middle East conflicts, the call for a Palestinian homeland, and the influence of Muslims here in America are what's helping to fuel the rise in anti-Semitism here in the U.S., I believe there is now and always has been another reason for the reemergence of anti-Semitism, a reason that many will deny, yet a reason many others know deep down to be truth. And in a single word, that reason is jealousy. And know that said jealousy is surely not of the Jewish religion, nor its beliefs and practices per se, but a simple jealousy of all that Jews have accomplished in spite of their being cast as pariahs throughout the entirety of recorded history. But know that jealousy alone does not necessarily turn one into an anti-Semite. In fact, studies have shown that what irks most anti-Semites above all else is how well the Jewish people have not only overcome the societal obstacles some deliberately throw in their path, but that they have successfully assimilated into the society in which they live. And why do Jews so willingly assimilate? Because they know well that to assimilate, to blend into their host or birth country's dedicated masses, actually lends itself to success. But unfortunately, it's proven to be success with a caveat, for success itself can lead to jealousy in some, which then, if the political situation lends itself to upheaval, allows simple jealousy to morph into outright politically fueled and, for some, politically advantageous anti-Semitism, I should say. And sadly, then the old tropes and stereotypes of Jews resurfaces, coupled with actions and corresponding reactions taken, which leads itself to a resurgence of hate, courtesy of liberal-baited media fodder, which in turn, Craig, leads to a rise in anti-Semitic actions, more times than not, especially against certain more highly, visibly religious segments of America's Jewish population, as in Orthodox and Hasidic Jews.
You know, there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of, you know, underlying tones there, but that can't be all of it. I mean, it might be the basis for a lot of this anti-Semitism we see today, but it can't be all of it. And there's got to be stuff under the surface, and I've got a feeling that a lot of what we're seeing today is due to what some people may see in their own mirrors.
Exactly. So what exactly does breed this now outwardly exposed contempt for Jews here in our country, as it must be about more than simple jealousy of Jewish success achieved, whether said success be of the monetary, occupational, or professional kind? And herein lies where the hate and the jealousy can more easily be explained. For while the anti-Semites among us love to herald what they call the, quote, overwhelming Jewish malfeasance and power grabs, courtesy of what they claim to be unfair advantages and power behind the scenes, the truth is that what most these folks hate and fear most is their own underlying failings, anger over failings, which they then transfer over to those who are truly successful. And know that the Jewish people here in the U.S. are some of the most successful, learned, and economically prosperous of all Americans, and it's for the simple reason that Jewish people as a whole value education and an intact family unit, especially in today's heated political climate, more than most do. And with said family unit being foremost at the center of Jewish life, family becomes the glue that holds both life's ups and downs together. And with traditional family values helping to ground ambition, the striving to make a success of one's life can be encouraged so as to flourish and grow. And this very act of encouragement, I believe, is not only missing from certain other minority groups, but from a certain segment of the general population as well. And it's these folks who seem to champion anti-Semitism as a way to deflect attention off their own numerous faults and aforementioned failings. Simply, the rhetoric of hate against Jews now engulfing our beloved America, coupled with a decided lack of personal encouragement to better oneself, betterment not at the expense of others, of course, is indeed the driving force behind jealousy of others' successes, which in turn, I believe, has led to a rise in hate crimes being perpetrated on Jews. And that, dear reader and listener, is something that should have no place in today's 21st century America, whether one be a Christian or a Jew, a Republican or a Democrat, with skin color notwithstanding.
You know, the situation has gotten so out of control, at least in my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, this anti-Semitism that we see, and you know, you rightly point out, it's not only in other parts of the world, it's here. And This stuff is absolutely ridiculous. And I, you know, you allude to it and you bring it up in here, but I think we need to highlight this a little bit more. I think one of the reasons the liberals are so anti-Jew in this country is because no matter what is thrown at the Jews and has been thrown at them over the decades and the centuries.
Centuries.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm just talking about here in this country. Mm-hmm. The Jewish people have never been apathetic. They're always motivated. They always want to go out. They don't want to be on welfare. They don't want the government to take care of them. They want to be their own people. They want to find their own success. They want to be self-reliant. They want to be everything that the liberal ideology is against.
Yeah, and if you, you know, go online and Google statistics, very few Jews are on welfare. Very, very few. And the few that are usually elderly who have lost their spouses, whatever. The Jewish people, for some reason, strive for success more than a lot of other groups. They don't have their handouts. They don't expect people to do anything for them. And history has shown no people have been persecuted more than Jews. Yet they have gotten over it, moved on, made successes of themselves, unlike certain other minority groups in this country who can't move on from something that happened in this country for a grand total, I believe it was 89 years.
Well,
because people forget that before the before July 4th and when we became a true nation, we were under British rule.
Yep.
It wasn't America, folks, that had slaves. It was Britain.
Yeah, up until 1776.
Right. And people don't get it. The Jews don't really live in the past like other minority groups do. They look forward to the future. And if you also Google things like the Nobel Prizes in medicine and achievements going on in the world, medical achievements, scientific achievements, it's Jews who lead the numbers.
Well, and liberals hate that because
hate it.
You know, they want people to just give up hope. And the only way they can get by is if somebody else takes care of them. You know, you talked about it. You know, people have their hands out.
Right.
You know, looking for other people's money. Well,
exactly.
that's not the Jewish way. You know, it's just not, right. And it never will be. And that is part of the reason why liberals and the liberal media, elected liberals like Ilhan Omar and AOC and Tlaib and so many others, it's why they feel the way they feel. It's why they express what they express, which is definitely anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and it's a form of jealousy of another group of people's success. And, you know, I'm not talking jealousy like, oh, this woman is jealous of that woman because she married a wealthy man. I'm talking about an internal jealousy that borders on hatred because you have not made of your life what somebody else has made of theirs.
Well, and, you know, when you talk about history and the history of the Jewish people, you're not talking about a few decades or even a couple of centuries. You're talking about thousands of years that history, you know. And these are people that have always taken what the world has thrown at them for thousands of years and found a way to overcome it.
Not only overcome it, but survive it. The Jewish people survived the Holocaust. And that in itself is amazing because most of Europe's Jewish population was murdered.
Right.
And yet they survived and they got a homeland, an ancestral homeland that technically was always theirs, whether the Palestinians like it or not. It's an amazing history. Take the religious context out of it and just look at the history.
The culture.
And it really is an amazing history of overcoming obstacles.
Yeah.
And turning the negatives into a positive.
You know, I've known a couple of rabbis really well in my life. And always, I mean, I never saw these people down. I never saw the Jewish people that I knew, either when I was growing up or as an adult, you know, the ones that I got to know well. Now, I'm sure I've known a lot of people who are Jewish, and I never even knew they were Jewish. Okay, because that,
right.
You know, that type of thing just doesn't really matter to me. But, you know, when somebody's a rabbi, it's kind of a hint that they're Jewish. And,
sure.
You know, a good friend of mine from 20, 25, 30 years ago, Rabbi Michael, this guy was so much fun to be around. He was always up. He was always funny. You know, he was always full of information. If you ever wanted to know anything about Judaism, about the culture, about the history, about the traditions, whatever the case might be, you could always call this guy up. He didn't have to be Jewish. He'd talk to anybody. He didn't care. You call him up, and you know, he would make you want to learn more. You know, and he was such a fountain of information that, you know, a lot of people I knew that were not Jewish would call him up and say, well, what about this? What about that? And I mean, they would talk to him more than they would talk to the pastor at their own church.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the striving for education that Jewish parents seem to instill in their children.
Well, they know nothing that's the key to success.
Nothing is as important as an education. Throughout history, Jews have been some of the most educated people.
It's the key to two things. It's the key to survival and the key to success.
Exactly. And that's missing in some other minority groups. Not just survival, but the encouragement to work towards success. Success
right.
doesn't come from having your hand out. Success comes from hard work, education, and family encouragement.
Well,
and I think the Jewish people as a whole have that, where some other groups don't have that.
Well, and you know, you look around, and I don't care what minority group you happen to be talking about. I don't care if it's black people. I don't care if it's Hispanics. I don't care if it's Asian people. I don't care if it's Jewish people. It doesn't matter to me. You know,
right.
whatever the minority group is, could be, you know, the gay community, could be any minority group in this country. The individuals in those groups that are successful are the ones that never thought to put their hands out. They worked for everything.
Exactly.
They got educated. They applied
exactly.
themselves. They chose a field. You know, and I don't care whether it's a white collar or blue collar field that they
right.
chose, doesn't make any difference. These are people that are successes, they're self-reliant, you know, and that's the vast majority of the minorities are in that category. But unfortunately, you've got the minority of the minorities sticking their hands out.
Yeah.
You and they'll never be successful.
Sticking their hands out usually never works. In fact, it backfires. The encouragement and the striving to better oneself, that should go across every single religious and ethnic group. But it doesn't. And that's the problem.
It's a sad
that's
problem.
That's why the jealousy comes in. That's why the hate comes in.
Yep.
You don't really hate the people you say you hate. You hate yourself for not being the success of the people you pretend to hate.
It's pretty simple when you boil it down.
Yeah.
You know, it is. And we haven't heard the last of this. I mean, this rise in anti-Semitism in this country is going to continue. And it's sick to me. It's absolutely sickening.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's just...
And it's sad it's happening in this country because we are seeing the vestiges here, folks, of 1939 happening all over again. And it's not just against Jews. It's against conservatives. It's against Catholics. It's against Christians, it's against Jews, and it's all being done from one side of the aisle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are markers, there are red flags, there are historical precedents. That's why I mentioned that earlier, you know, in this segment. There are always historical precedents, and if you refuse to recognize them, if you refuse to call them out and deal with them, in the early stages, then you're kind of lost down the road.
Yeah.
You know,
and
it's very
people
simple.
Need to wake up to the fact that the old hatreds should be gone. And that's across the board. The past is the past. You cannot change the past, but you can change your future by changing how you act here and now.
Yeah, I mean, get with it, folks. I mean, you know, the media is going to continue on this bent. There's a lot of elected liberals that are going to continue on this bent, you know, until the pressure gets so great that they have to shut the hell up.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Folks, I want you to go to Diane's blog at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. I want you to grab the link to this, okay, on anti-Semitism in America and share it everywhere. The more people understand the root of the problem, the more people understand the culturally significant parts of it, the historical parts of it, so on and so forth, the more apt we're going to be able to put this crap to bed once and for all.
Yeah. And there should really be no hate against anyone based on their religion, their skin color, anything. These are old hatreds that need to be put aside so we can move forward into a better future.
I mean, it is the 21st century after all. I mean, why harbor hatreds from thousands of years ago, from 5,000 years ago, or 3 or 4,000 or 2,000 years? I mean, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
It doesn't make any sense at all. ThePatriotFactor.blogspot.com or RSPRadio1.com. Either place, you're going to find the link to Diane's op-ed. Get it, share it everywhere. We got to take a break here at the top of the hour. When we come back, one segment to go. Buckle up, folks. There's a snark attack on the way. Birds, barbecues, and other racist nonsense. That's what we're going to be talking about in a couple of minutes when we have more on Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Glad you're with us tonight, and again, if you miss any part of the show, just go to rspradio1.com. Tomorrow, we'll be there in the podcast. Just hit that podcast button. We'll be right at the top of the list, but you can always take your choice of any of the shows in the list.
Mm-hmm.
And we know we have people doing that, so you won't be alone. That's the best part of it. Mm-hmm. All right, so Diane, you took on a very serious topic in a very serious way tonight. I am taking on a very serious topic in not so serious of a way.
but it's still serious in its own right.
Well, it is. And, you know, look, you know, either you get it or you don't. Right? It's one of those things. So like I said, sit down, buckle up. This is going to be a rough ride, but we're going to have some fun with this. Snark is defined as an attitude or expression of mocking, irreverence, and sarcasm. But I believe there's more to it than just that. You see, snark, as so defined, is my default setting. I tend to see the world through snark goggles, and my view of the world has been this way since I was a kid. And although the definition covers most of my attitudes towards so many things I see, it doesn't go quite far enough. I have, over the decades of practice, honed my snark into what I consider to be the literary and literal equivalent of Newton's third law. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. While sarcasm and irreverence certainly cover the basics, I also believe that every absurdity must be met with equal and opposite absurdity. Isaac Newton, or as his friends used to no doubt refer to him, Ike, was a bona fide idiot, in spite of what you may believe, because he was a racist. You see, not only was Ike white, and we all know that all white people are racist, but Ike Newton was also a shareholder in the South Sea Company, which was in the primary business of shipping slaves across the Atlantic. And never mind that Ike lost his shirt in the venture. He was a shareholder and therefore, well, you know. I mean, because of his association, loose as it was, in the shipping of slaves, his theory of gravity must therefore also be racist, right? I know, to people with at least one working brain cell, that seems absurd, but I'm betting there are some black people out there who don't find it absurd in the least, which provides a reasonable count regarding the number of working brain cells they have amassed between them. Gravity must immediately be canceled. Diane, there's a woman by the name of Ida B. Wells Barnett High School, okay? It's a school in Portland, Oregon. We were talking about Portland earlier in the show. And we all know what a bastion of working brain cells Portland has been recently. It's ditched the idea of having an evergreen tree as a mascot because, well, you know, racism. You see, according to the Portland Public School Board of Education's director, one Michelle DePass, quote, a tree could conjure up reminders of hanging people with ropes from branches.
Well, you know, there's another idiotic idea why white trees are racist, and this one is as stupid as the one she gave, let's put it that way.
Well, and it's not just white trees, it's all trees, apparently.
Yes.
I mean, yes. Look, we must seem like fools, right? With working brain cells, we should feel like fools, having looked at trees our entire lives and not once equated them with racism. But to those sans a working brain cell, trees are racist. Not just because Democrats used to hang perfectly good black people from their branches, but because the ships that brought slaves to our shores were made from trees. Ships today are made of far different materials, but they still build them from the same basic design, and therefore, because ships from hundreds of years ago are racist, so too are ships today. If one is but stupid enough to follow liberal logic, but I suggest the situation is a bit more complex than you might think. You see, even though ships that transported people across the Atlantic today are not made of wood, the beds on today's ships are covered in sheets and pillowcases. The costumes Democrats used to wear when they strung perfectly good black people up in trees. So sheets and pillowcases are systemically racist. Mm-hmm. Just as are anyone who has such linens in their home. And come to think of it, Diane, I am willing to bet that some of the very same bleating black people who have the combined cognitive capabilities of a common cabbage have things in their homes made of wood, and they sleep on sheets in pillowcases.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you want to take this even further, let's see, you've got to avoid racist mascots, racist trees. But, you know, they're taking it even now beyond mascots and trees, all the way down to, you know, shrubbery, maybe?
Yeah, well, you know, it could be. Look, if you want a new mascot for your school and you want to avoid racist trees, I would suggest a shrubbery. Nobody I have ever heard of has ever been hung by the neck or strung up from a shrubbery. So shrubbery cannot possibly be racist. Or can it?
Yes,
it can. You see, aside from the fact that both trees and shrubbery are woody, there is something else that they share that makes them racist. Birds. Have you ever heard of the Jameson's fire finch? How about the Bachman's sparrow or Wallace's fruit dove? You know, outside of avid birders, most folks have never heard of such birds and wouldn't recognize one if it hopped up and pecked them in the ass. But they and some 150 other bird species are damned racist. You see, the Jamesons, the Wallaces, and the Bachmans, they and so many other birds were named for people who wore maybe sheets and pillowcases and wood-loving racist bastards who all appreciated the gravity of things like Newton. We can't go about our day-to-day lives knowing that a clearly racist Bachman sparrow from a totally non-racist grasshopper sparrow and be happy. You see, we must know that some birds, by virtue of their names, are simply and completely racist because some Democrat back in the day had said birds named after them. Those names must be changed before people who either know nothing about racist birds or people that do are further traumatized by systemically racist avian creatures. I understand it would be impossible to educate those without a working brain cell to quickly identify any form of our feathered friends, save those found in a bucket with extra crispy coating. You see, I have an idea. Let's just rename all the birds and avert the problem. We can name all the birds after dead black former criminals who have had sainthood bestowed upon them, or black criminal faux reverends who chase ambulances and microphones, thus making those with flapping pie holes and not a single working brain cell between them be less offended every time they see a bird. So let's start with the common rock pigeon, Diane. They're darker in color, and they're often found in urban areas. Henceforth, the rock pigeon shall be referred to as the Trayvon Martin pigeon. You know, if Obama had a son, it would be pooping on an Obama statue.
Absolutely. And then, Craig, how about, you know, scavenger birds? I kind of can think of a couple of people that might be deserving of having their names put on scavenger birds.
You know, that's a good point. Birds like buzzards and vultures, maybe? Is that what you're thinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how about we call them Al Sharpton buzzards and Jesse Jackson vultures?
This is my favorite one, though.
Oh, the ringneck pheasant. Yeah, the ringneck pheasant. You see, in order to avoid any connotation of racism, the ringneck pheasant shall now and forevermore be known as the George Floyd pheasant. Too soon? You can send your hate letters to I don't give flying race-baiting shit at gmail.com, because I don't really. All right? Look, I'm pretty sure we'll have to come up with a new name for the red-winged blackbird, because as it is, It's got to be pissing off certain Native American and BLM community organizers who couldn't scrounge up a working brain cell with an ancient Egyptian mummification cranial swizzle stick. Now, I got to tell you, if you go to the blog at thenationalpatriot.com, it's at this point in this commentary that you could actually listen to what I suggest should be the new black national anthem. But Diane, that's not a white guy whistling Dixie in that song. It's nothing Hunter Biden didn't write in his emails, and liberals ain't calling either one of them a racist.
No, it is. No, they're not. But it's a funny thing. I won't say it. I'll let people go to the site and click on it and listen to it. But, you know, since you're kind of talking about summer, you know, when bird watching takes place and all that, isn't there, you know, another thing that has racist connotation, a thing most of us like and look forward to in the summer?
It's actually something I did just last weekend. We're talking about barbecuing.
Oh, no, they're racist, too. Barbecues?
Barbecues are racist, you privileged white cretins. Listen, the Europeans helped out a little, but barbecue is a cultural thing that came from slaves and Native Americans who were yearning to be free. So if you're not sleeping in a teepee or wearing your pants at half-mast, you should not be tossing another shrimp on the barbie, you culturally appropriating, white supremacist, cop-loving, flag-waving, Aunt Jemima syrup-pouring, Uncle Ben's rice-eating, systemically racist pieces of crap. Get your pasty asses back inside and have your kitchen staff make your dinner in the kitchen the way God intended white people to cook. Maybe you could go on a cruise in a ship and sleep on crisp white sheets while you travel to see the birds and trees of some faraway place, but be careful not to fall into the ocean, because back in the days of Ike Newton's slave ships, sharks used to follow the slavers waiting for bodies to be tossed overboard. I'll bet you didn't know that sharks were racist, especially the great white sharks, but now you do. Sure, it's absurd, but thanks to my default setting, it has all now been met with equal and opposite absurdity. You feel me, bro?
The great white shark. Oh, no, it's pretty soon it's going to be the great black shark just for equality.
Okay, come on. Black sharks matter.
Oh, my God.
Black sharks.
But
now,
you know,
folks,
what? As funny as this commentary is, there's underlying truth in it, because it shows the absolute absurdity of racism. Hating people because of the color of their skin. White people hating black people, yet white people, you know, bake themselves on the beach every summer to get a tan to look like black people, and black people trying to look like white people by dyeing their hair blonde, putting in extensions. I mean, the whole thing of racism is absolutely stupid.
Well, not only is racism stupid, but calling things racist that clearly aren't is doubly stupid. Okay.
How about snow? How about snow?
Well, it's white.
Wait, racist, because it's only white. It only turns black when it's slush and yucky.
Well, but I mean, look, trees, right? Trees.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not kidding. You know, all the things that I talk about in here are being deemed, barbecues are being deemed racist. Trees are being deemed racist. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is how ridiculous this has gotten. Trees aren't racist. They're just not. Trees are trees.
I know, it's ridiculous. How? Please tell me, how is a tree racist?
Well, you see, according to some of these nuts, like you know, these people in Portland. Well, you know, back in the day, you know, Democrats used to hang perfectly good black people in trees. Therefore, trees conjure up racism. No, they don't. I mean, look, if you look at a tree and all you think about is racism, you've got a problem. I mean, you need a checkup from the neck up.
It's absolutely ridiculous what's going on here now. And it all was going away until Obama said the words, "If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin." That brought it all back, brought it all to a head, and it's been thriving ever since because he's behind the scenes egging it on.
The Trayvon Martin pigeon.
Yeah.
I mean, there you go. Now, folks, I got to tell you, when you go to the blog, okay, when you go to thenationalpatriot.com and you look at this, pay attention to the illustrations.
Yeah, they're funny.
You know, there are some. I have gotten some great comments, you know, on this. People have been sending me messages for 2 days on this particular commentary, and they get it. You know, they get it. Now, along with the great comments, I've gotten a couple of hate comments from liberals because they don't get it. You know, they read something like this and they think, well, automatically they think I'm a racist, A, because I'm white, and B, because I wrote this. You know, they don't get it. They don't get how absurd they are.
Right,
this is
exactly.
Just them. This is just them in the mirror. That's all it is. Yeah, I told a liberal that earlier today, and he got mad. I said, well, you must recognize yourself in this. You know, what are you going to do? Diane's op-ed today is at the patriotfactor.blogspot.com. Mine is at thenationalpatriot.com. Both of them are at rspradio1.com. So you can get your hands on these links and you can share them everywhere. But, you know, Diane, I just like you sitting back and you know, getting upset, and rightfully so, about all the anti-Semitism going on, I look at this stuff and I think, How bone stupid do people have to believe that a tree is racist or your bed sheets are racist or that a bird is racist? I mean, barbecues? It's a barbecue, for crying out loud. You know, oh, white people shouldn't have barbecues because that came from the Native Americans and the slaves. I'm sorry, but good food is good food. I don't care who makes it.
You know what? The thing is, this is all politically manufactured garbage being spewed to stir up hate in this country.
Yeah.
It's done on purpose. It's done to divide us. And yes, we might look at it, you know, you take on a snarky look at it. I take on a more serious look at this kind of stuff, but we're looking at the same thing. We're looking at stupid people falling for what they're telling them they have to know, they have to accept. It's Common Core on steroids.
It is. Now, I'm going to tell you how dumb this has gotten, okay? And tonight's show just keeps going back to Portland. There is a gay pride thing in Portland coming up. I think it's either this weekend or next weekend. Yeah, I'm not sure of the date. But they are going to charge a fee to get into this thing. It's going to be like in a city park or something. But they're going to charge a fee to get in this, and it could be anywhere from $10 to $50 but they're only going to charge white people, and the money goes to reparations. For black and brown and indigenous LGBTQEIEIO people.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Now, if you're a bleeding heart, flaming liberal, okay, and you're white and you want to go and show your support, feel free to give them all the money in your bank account. Don't stop at 10 bucks or 20 or 50. Give them all your money. Because nobody with a working brain cell, I don't care what color they are, nobody with a working brain cell is going to be attending that get-together.
Ridiculous.
You know, because now, you know, if you want to go to an event in Portland where they're desperately trying to get people to come back and visit them, if you want to go to an event in Portland and you happen to be white, you're going to have to pay reparations. This is how dumb this is getting.
First of all, they got their holiday, Juneteenth, the 19th. Okay, that's supposed to have marked the official end of slavery in Texas, hence the United States. Well, if slavery ended on Juneteenth, 18, whatever, there's your reparations. You got your holiday. We don't owe you anything else. How about all the Americans in the Union Army who died to set your ancestors free? We don't owe you one bloody dime. No one alive today was a slave. No one alive today owned a slave. Get over it.
Now, I know what you're saying, and I know what you mean about Juneteenth, okay? But I, for one, think this is a great holiday. It's not as good as Groundhog's Day, but it's a great holiday.
I think it's ridiculous.
Oh, no. No. See, I think it's great, and I'll tell you why. Because it marks the day that white Republicans freed the slaves.
Oh, okay. If you want to look at it that way, okay.
I'm looking at it the way it factually is.
Okay. White Republican males.
Yep. Freed the slaves.
Freed the slaves. Reparations paid.
Yep.
Nothing to see here, folks. Move on.
That's it. I'm looking at it from a purely historical standpoint.
Okay. I like that.
I mean, Lincoln, Republican. Right? Good old honest Abe. It was Lincoln's party that put an end to slavery. It was the Republicans of the North who were fighting the Democrats in the South. And the Republicans in the North in the Civil War, that was the army that ended it. That was the army that ended slavery. Now, I understand it took a couple of years to get to Galveston and turn those loose, the slaves there loose, right? And that's what Juneteenth is all about. But again, it was white Republicans that made that ride 2 years later all the way to Galveston. So,
right.
Therefore, it's a great holiday.
Well, I'm sorry. If you want to celebrate that it was white Republicans that freed the slaves, fine.
Yep.
Okay. But this whole slavery thing, it's getting old. It's getting tiring. It's been around, you know, for centuries. The blacks need to, if they really want reparations, they need to look to Africa and their tribal chiefs that sold them into slavery.
Look, I just view holidays in their most historically significant aspects. So Juneteenth, that's the holiday marking when white Republicans freed the slaves. Just like St. Patrick's Day is the greatest Scottish holiday on earth, because St. Patrick was actually a Scotsman who was, get this, a slave, of Ireland.
That's true.
It is
That's true.
Greatest Scottish holiday on the planet. Sorry, Irish folks, but it's historically significant. Well, with that, Diane, I think we've gotten to the end of the program tonight. What do you think?
Yes, we have.
Time to say goodnight, Diane.
Okay. Nighty-night, folks. See you Friday.
Good night, folks.
I mean, Friday.
Yeah, Friday. Yeah, because today's Tuesday.
Right.
All day.
I know. The days just are blending one into another now, that's all.
They really are. Folks, look, have a good rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday, okay? Night-night, everybody.
Night.